Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina and Jen. We have, Movement Museum, where we talk about dance on your radio, on your computer, all over the place. How are you guys doing?
All right. Good.
Good. My fingers are really cold.
Yeah, it's
but
cold
they're
out.
They're warming up.
It's cold
out. Chilly.
It became winter.
Suddenly.
Yeah.
As far as getting also official stuff out of the way, you're listening to us on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer, mobile device. You can find us on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on iTunes. If you look under a rock, we're probably there as well. I think I got everything out of the way. And, we have lots of stuff to go over. Because
no poem?
Oh, thank you.
I was looking forward to the poem.
Thank God.
You're too calm today. You didn't need the poem.
No, I didn't look at the run sheet. Sometimes if my head isn't attached to my shoulders, I don't know where I'd put it. This is Danse Russe by William Carlos Williams. It's one of my favorite poems from when I was in high school. If when my wife is sleeping, and the baby and Kathleen are sleeping, and the sun is flame-white disk and silken mists above shining trees, if I in my north room dance naked, grotesquely, before my mirror, waving my shirt around my head and singing softly to myself, I am lonely, lonely, I was born to be lonely, I am best so. If I admire my arms, my face, my shoulders, flanks, buttocks against the yellow-drawn shades, who shall say I am not the happy genius of my household?
Yeah.
And I think I liked it because I was about 14 when I read that first, and reading that word buttocks. Buttocks is always lots of fun, even as a non-14-year-old. You guys did great last week.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah, you guys.
We did miss you, though.
You don't need me. And we'll get you more poems as well. I realize I'm being too possessive about the poems, but we can discuss it. Anyhow, we have lots of stuff because we've seen lots of shows and have been talking to various people and not talking about the shows we've seen.
Yeah, and there's lots of good stuff out there.
Yes.
It's busy season.
There's lots. And CINAR is just finished, and there were so many shows.
Did you see any of those?
I did. I saw one performance. It wasn't dance. It was more theater. Four excerpts of different theater shows, and I think it was at the Monument National.
That's a nice space.
Yeah, it was a really beautiful space. Four half an hour excerpts, different shows.
And how was it?
You want to go first?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess I'll go first. Let's see, the first one, I don't remember where the company is from because I didn't get the program, but it was two men, a lot older. And it was hilarious. It was like almost like old school, like Charlie Chaplin style, silent, physical comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like one old man who was playing the piano, kind of almost like very crazily playing the piano. And another man, when we came in, because we came in a few minutes late, he was like on the stage running and doing all these crazy different mime-like movements with the music. And then he began to interact with the pianist man, who isn't just a pianist. He was like he was also like an actor, comedian, and it was really hilarious. They also had these big screens that were like they were doing shadow work with at the back, and then he had a chair and he was eating a hot dog and trying to watch fireworks, and he kept missing the fireworks because he would be trying to buy a hot dog and then he'd look down and then the fireworks would go off, but the sound of the fireworks was being created by the man behind the piano. And then he would just this whole scene where he's trying to watch the fireworks, and every time he looked away to do something, it would go off and he'd miss it and he'd slip off his chair or he'd lose his hot dog or he'd fall over. And just like really well done, really well done. And definitely like an older company.
Mm-hmm.
Super engaging. And then the other three pieces were more theatrical, more serious. There was one, it's always so hard for me to watch theater because it's in French and I can't understand it as well. But it was one about a girl.
When did you see these?
This was on Saturday.
Okay, so hold on a second, let me get the proper window up here. Company Chalouette from Belgium. And then Dynamo Theater from Canada doing Ghost and Ladders.
Yes.
Patrice Thibault from France doing Cocorico.
Yeah.
And Théâtre INK doing La Robe du Gulnara.
Oh, parfait.
Okay, cool. So which was the one with the first one?
The first one.
I can't remember.
I know the last one was Théâtre Dynamo.
Okay.
And I guess I'll just jump to that since I just brought them up. But they had a setup on the stage full of ladders, like really high ladders, and then some short ones, and it was three male performers and one female playing the violin on top of a ladder, and then the three males were just running around interacting. It's actually a show. On the program it said it was for children ages 8 and up, so it was more geared towards the children's more geared for children. And so they were just climbing on the ladders and doing stunts and, you know, jumping from one ladder to the next and kind of teasing one another, the three boys. And then the one most beautiful moment actually was they were on a ladder that was tipped so that the peak of it was on the ground, and then the two performers were hanging on the top of one side and they would teeter-totter on this huge ladder back and forth. And so the one side of the ladder would tip to the bottom, and then the other guy would jump on and then tip it back, and it was just actually, it was really beautiful and kind of scary to watch. You're like, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Sounds like a very acrobatic circus-like.
Yeah, very acrobatic circus-like. And I think that is the company, Dynamo, is acrobatic circus. And the other company was like about a girl who had taken her sister's wedding dress and put it on and was playing with it, and then she falls over and gets asphalt on
Théâtre INK.
Okay, so she gets asphalt on the dress, and so this whole play is about her trying to fix this dress, and she runs into these, you know, these different characters and these different dilemmas. Again, it was a lot in French, so I wasn't able to
black asphalt on the white dress.
And it was a big crew. There was probably 7 or 8 actors and actresses on stage. And then the other piece, the third piece, was a duet, and I believe that's the European company.
Yeah, company Shallywaite.
Yeah.
And Josefina.
Yeah. I was a male and a female, and it was like a love story. It started with this guy on stage, and the setup was like a kitchen. They were like garlic cloves hanging, and there was like a table with like a kettle and cooking utensils, and he was sitting on a stool, and the female performer is behind him, and she kind of does, you know, her legs and her limbs are reaching out behind him and doing and manipulating these things as he's like reading, but he's not very aware that she's there. And then they eventually move into this duet where they're like manipulating one each other, and there's a bit of text, but actually a lot more movement in it. And that piece was interesting as well, though I felt like by the end of it, they were manipulating each other's bodies, and they would create like images with it, and like different images, like, you know, like a sailboat, or like, I can't remember the other ones, but I felt like they could have pushed the movement a little bit more, because after a few minutes it was like, okay, I get it, like I understand what they're trying to do, but it just kept going on that same level and it didn't really take us anywhere else. So it was really beautiful in that sense, and the music was very nice as well, but just that part, I think near the end it was lacking some kind of development that took us.
Well, there, do you think that's because they only did excerpts, so they didn't do entire pieces? And do you think that's due to just them trying to decide, okay, this is the greatest hit from that play, and that's the reason, or from that performance, and that's why they didn't have any development? Or because that to me would be something extremely confusing, just to see little bits and pieces of stuff where you're saying, okay, I want to know what happened before and what happened after.
Yeah, I can, for that duet specifically, if they were really, because yes, it was for presenters and producers, I felt like they didn't do a very good job of that, because it became flat. It became kind of unidimensional, because it didn't take us anywhere else, and in that way I don't feel it was successful in terms of being just an excerpt, because you're like, okay, like 5 minutes of, all right, I understand this.
It's like a medley, theater medley.
But the thing too about these excerpts is that you have these four different works, and they vary in quality and in mood and stuff, and sometimes when you watch something that is really, really amazing, and then you see another piece that isn't so great, it's really hard because you've just seen something really amazing. And yeah, my partner went to see a circus performance down in at Place des Arts, and the same thing happened. The first company, I believe, was from Australia, and he was just blown away. And then the other ones, it was just really hard for them to be up to par, especially when you've just seen, you know, them one next to the other.
It's like a variety show.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah.
And there's variety and quality.
Yeah. So it was good variety.
Okay. Yeah. No, I'm disappointed I missed CNARS. There was a bunch of stuff I wanted to see, but I was unable to.
Yeah. But what I find interesting is that there appears to be a lot of movement in the theater, and there's now a lot of theater and dance.
Yeah.
So there's a real overlap and reaching out between the disciplines.
It just confuses me.
Oh. Well, you would have been really confused there at the Agora de la Danse. Did you see the Michael Trent thing as well?
Is what that the
did
one
you think?
Talking?
Yeah. What did you think about that?
What did you think?
Well,
did
I thought I thought it was more theater than dance. They called it 60 dances in 60 minutes.
Yeah.
Not much of a dance there.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things that was really questioned about Michael Trent's work. So I guess we're going into dance makers.
Mm-hmm.
We can
go
into dance makers. What did I think? Actually, I left. I felt really inspired when I left. I was like, this is so cool. I loved it for different reasons, which I can break down. But yeah, the whole question of whether this was dance or not, the show 60 Dances in 60 Minutes, it's about time, 60 Dances in 60 Minutes. I would say that it's not purely dance in the conventional sense, because I think when people come to the theater and they watch or they're expecting to see dance, they're definitely not going to expect to see what had happened in that show. But for me, I felt like it was dance. It definitely had dance in it, because it was, even though the whole show was very task oriented and there was a lot of acting and text, for me it was dance, because the performers really had to be physically engaged throughout the whole thing, in terms of the tasks and the way they had to execute these different vignettes, they're called.
Mm.
And so with dance too, it really had a lot to do with the performer's timing, the performer's relationship to one another in the different sections. And yeah, there's a purely physical engagement in everything they had to do, whether it was, you know, just carrying the big vessel of water. Like, it takes a certain type of, you know, physicality and a presence. And so for me, like, yeah, it's not purely dance in the conventional sense, but I wouldn't negate it as not being dance. And definitely it is very theatrical as well.
Yeah, I thought it was more theater, more, because even an actor would have to be very aware of their space and the objects.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, it's really borderline dance. And if you put dance in the title, then you don't do any. Mm-hmm. And it's movement in space.
Mm.
Then, I mean, any movement in space. It's like saying, is it art? You know, and you put it in a gallery and say, well, it is now.
Was there any sort of plot and dialogue?
There was a structure to the whole thing. The idea was they're doing certain tasks, or what they call dances, that supposed to last a minute. And they did a set of those one-minute tasks. After that, they repeated the same tasks.
Tasks like pour water.
They had like running back and forth and jumping. They had sitting down, one person sitting down and two other people tickling that person that sat down. And the person sitting had to count and wasn't able to fight anyone off. There was the guy who carried a big, like an aquarium style vessel filled with water diagonally across the stage. There was someone with a huge pile of discarded clothes and was just, you know, going through the clothes and laying them out on the floor and lying on top of them. So they were nonsensical random acts, and they were meant to be nonsensical random acts that had no meaning in themselves and didn't really go together in any kind of overarching structure. And I think they were meant to be this neutral because it wasn't about what you were doing. It was just about that you were doing something for a period of time. And that period of time was supposed to be a minute. And at the beginning of the show, all the five dancers stood in a row facing the audience and just stood there for what they thought was a minute. And when the minute was over, they would raise their hand. So it had a strong, processy, improv kind of feel to it. And it felt for me a little studied, this kind of studied, slightly artificial spontaneity that, of course, they had practiced it so many times just to be able to feel what a minute exactly feels like, how long it is. But then you go on stage and you're all kind of improv-y, you know, I've seen a lot of improv shows that had that kind of feel to it. And then you had that studied part that just didn't really gel with me. Mm-hmm. I found it was amusing and it was nice and seeing those tasks, and especially comical when they reduced the time down to 15 seconds. So they did everything again, carrying the water and tickling the person, and you know, now instead of carrying an aquarium across the stage, it was a shot glass filled with water. So a couple of these things were actually physically reduced and was kind of gag-like, and was amusing.
Was there a program that explained what they were doing, or it just was presented as this is how we're doing
it?
Or
there was a monologue first. One of the dancers went up, and everything was in English, actually. So in our program, we had her text translated into French. And she said, we're going to do something for a minute, and then, you know, that's going to last for half an hour and then, or 10 minutes. And then we're going to do another thing for 15 seconds, and then we're going to do something else that lasts 3 minutes, and which is going to last half an hour. And then we're going to do something with the audience, and somebody's going to keep time, and there's going to be a 50-second interval between all the sets. And so we were clued in as to what the basic structure was right from the start. Mm-hmm. And then it was just a question of just watching the process unfold again and again. And the first set was fun because it was this discovery, and then when they were doing everything in 15 seconds, you kind of went, oh, okay, you know, I recognize this. And when they did everything again at the last 3 minutes, I was starting to scribble in my program because the novelty had worn off, and now everything's lasted for 3 minutes, and somebody explaining how to iron a shirt for 3 minutes, especially after you've heard it twice before, was becoming a lot less interesting. I don't know how you felt about the whole repetitive part.
The repetitive part? I actually didn't mind the repetitive part. I thought it was interesting, like, compositionally, choreographically, because there was a sense of reference, like you were saying, like, I understand that he's going to do this again. But what I found effective was that you knew what to expect. Because even from the beginning, the girl was like, we're going to do this for this amount of time, and then we're going to do this in half an hour, and then we'll do this. So it's like, all right, so we know what you're going to do, but the interesting thing about it choreographically was you didn't know how it was going to change. So there was always this reference point that was like, okay, I know they're going to do this again, but how are they going to do it this time in a variation that, you know, was to really go with what Michael Trent was trying to do with, you know, exploring this idea of time and how we perceive it when we either expand it or contract it, or you know, like, you know, speeding the whole thing up. So I thought it was interesting to watch the different sections being varied to accommodate the time change. And I thought it was effective. So I think there were maybe, you know, some points at the end where I was like, all right, I get it. But for the most part, I found myself fairly engaged. And what I actually really liked, too, about the show was that there were parts that were really humorous, and I was, you know, I really enjoyed just laughing in the theater and just, like, really just having a good time laughing at what was happening. And I don't find that that happens a lot for myself anyways. So that was, you know, it was humorous. It was good.
Yeah, I like that when at one point they came out with a trampoline.
Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah, I do.
Because there was 1 second where two people had to jump. Mm-hmm. And I think it was at the 15-second part. They had to jump really fast. And she brought the trampoline out, and the whole audience got the gag, and they all started laughing because they kind of knew what was coming next.
Now, it sounds like it was a more conceptual sort of piece that I can sort of understand and describing and saying, yeah, but then once you put a performance up, it's like, it works as in theory, but not in practice.
It worked in practice, but it was so an obvious point to make. that I found it a little superficial. Mm. Yeah, it was very comprehensible. It was charming, amusing. They did it well. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting point to think about actual versus perceived time. But after an hour, that's about as much as you can belabor the point, you know. Mm. I think it was probably more fun to work on and to workshop this and to perform it than it was for us to watch it. Mm. That's my guess. I liked at the very end they asked the audience to just sit there and, you know, decide what a minute was and raise your hand. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, there was a little audience participation. So that was cute.
I think this is the one thing I wanted to add to is after I left, I was like, oh my God, I would love to perform in a piece like that. Because I feel like you just, for the performers, because they actually were timed. There was like someone sitting in the front timing.
Yeah, there was
the
a
different
peep.
Sections.
Yeah, yeah, there was always a peep after every set, some sort of tooting sound.
Yeah, so in that way too, like as a performer in that piece, why I was like, I would really love to perform in that piece is you, like, I think every performance you really have to be on the ball. Mm. You know, it's, you can't really get comfortable because there is this sense of timing that they had, were restrained to be in. But at the same time, there was that paradox of not leaving the timing aspect to the individual's own perception. So it's kind of interesting paradox. You know what I mean, Bettina? Like they were being timed. They had to do this in 30 minutes. They had to do it in 10 minutes. They had to do it in 1 minute. But at the same time, it was left in between when they would raise their hands, when they thought that 1 minute was up. You know, there was that sense of leaving the whole timing aspect to the individuals.
Although there, my question would be is, given that they practice and stuff like that, it's fairly easy to sort of know when a minute has passed. Just by
they were trying to screw themselves up. Yes. So part of these exercise, for example, the jumping, makes your heart go faster. So then your body perceives time to last longer because now you're getting tired and you don't want to jump for an hour or a minute or 3 minutes. So and also the tickling. And sometimes they thought of exercises. How can we get the poor person who is now performing this task to really want this to be over faster so it feels longer or maybe not long enough? Mm-hmm. So at that, I thought that was an interesting intellectual construct that they built into this whole set. And also something we didn't mention, there was a soundtrack. They had asked 60 people, random people, to record a minute of random sound. Again, this whole randomness idea. And it obviously was a sequence. And apparently during, well, the performance that I went to, they kind of screwed up the sound a little bit, which in turn screwed up the performers because they do get cues a little bit from that soundscape. Mm. Though it was a very obscure soundscape.
What happened when it got screwed up?
Apparently they managed to catch back up, but it started too early.
Oh.
And so they went in sync at the beginning of the performance, and then the tech guy managed to sync it up later on.
Oh.
That was during the Q&A. Were you there at the same time I was
no,
there?
No.
You guys saw it on different days.
Oh, right, because I there was a Q&A after where they explained it. So the dancers, nice as they were, they didn't really have much to say. They're just like, yeah, we did a lot of improv. Mm. And stuff lasts a minute. We really trained ourselves to make things last a minute. Mm. And that was pretty much the entire story.
Interesting.
So what about Wozzeck?
We talked a little bit about it
last week. I figure I want to get more details because there like the idea where you were sort of going off about how it's, which one of them? Yeah, you have it as part of your cultural DNA, I would almost imagine.
Yes, and it's serious DNA, and it's a serious piece, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about, you know, murder and murder most foul, and it's, you know, some guy who's basically driven into a corner and following orders and being tortured. And
then you don't feel you're all right to change that around?
It's not the way it was done. I had a bit of an issue with the superficial sugar-coated humor that was interjected because it didn't go with the piece.
Although, could you think that could come from just the cultural differences in terms of where one of the things that I find, and after hearing it and stuff, because I did listen to the show last week, I was very impressed, was that, yes, when you don't know a language and you don't have the cultural references, there's an awful lot of laughing going on.
Yeah, but it was not that kind of humor where they were getting grammar wrong. It was a kind of humor where slapstick move.
It's not so much that I'm saying that that's sort of where they get it wrong, but in terms of trying to impart that same sort of cultural disconnect.
So the only thing, I thought about this later, and I thought the only reason somebody could possibly take a piece that is about, you know, torture and people dying and have comical interludes is maybe to make it darker, that it is so dire and the people in power are so heartless that, and now you're also laughing about it, that it's supposed to make it worse.
Could you give us a little overview of the performance and
so
what happened and was going on?
So the what was going on was a very bare stage. Basically, it's about this guy. I think you call it Wojciech. I call it Wojciech.
My pronunciation is wrong.
Whatever.
It's your cultural DNA. It's not mine.
I think it's Wojciech. I'm also not Polish, so I'm not 100% sure. And it's this piece by. This is actually something that happened. So this the soldier got the a woman pregnant and killed her because she was also sleeping around with her lieutenant. He was a soldier, and he was. Being made fun of. This is, of course, in 18-something when you did not get women pregnant and, she was also a prostitute. And it was a very dark case that at the time also made a lot of hay in the newspapers. So Büchner picked it up. Actually, Büchner made it more put it into the military context. So he, slanted it more politically than it was initially, that's not how the story happened. He made it a little darker. Mm. So I expected something really bleak. And especially when I read the previews, because I always read stuff ahead of time. And, I saw the picture and there was this guy who was playing Wojciech and he was sort of imprisoned by chairs. And I thought, wow, okay, maybe I'm going to need a drink after. Which is good, sometimes you need a dark piece. And the chairs were there. It was really interesting that they took these very... a minimalist utilitarian chairs and use them in various ways as, to stand on, to create cages. And right at the beginning, actually was the most interesting use of the chair. They were holding all up the same chair, like the whole bunch of dancers, and then they tore the chair apart and danced with the pieces. So they were deconstructing the chair and it became, all about angles and lines. And I thought this is starting really well. And then, the people who danced, the soldiers, as a group, I mean, everybody was technically brilliant, but I had an issue that like one or two of the dancers, they were dancing characters. And there was always this one little cute little character, female dancer, female soldier, who would, drop the chair or do something adorable or get something wrong. It was like slapsticky. Mm. And I thought that does not gel with the gist of the play and it doesn't add anything. And why do we need comic relief at this point? It doesn't make it darker or better. I also thought it unfortunate that they took random pieces from the Büchner piece that didn't connect at all. It was all very deconstructed. So you didn't get the dramatic arc of the story at all.
If you didn't get the dramatic arc of the story and there were the comic things that obviously you didn't like, if it wasn't part of your cultural DNA, if you were just viewing it as a straight performance without knowing any of the story, do you think it might have worked better?
Yeah, I think it just as an abstract piece, as a well-danced performance, it worked really well. But if you're expecting Wojciech, you aren't getting Wojciech. Mm-hmm. That was my issue with the piece.
And then given that there was a Korean troupe, if I remember correctly, that danced it, is there any possibility of making any connections between what's happening there now with everybody wanting to blow up everybody and kill everybody?
That's what I expected. I thought, wow, Koreans doing Wojciech. I mean, it's going to be super political, But it was more like Chinese theater.
Oh.
And they do say it's kinetic theater with a direct route to Korean dance. And I did see the Asian dance. They, you know, I've seen a lot of Chinese theater, and there were definitely echoes of that, the exaggerated movements, a lot of grimacing. They even painted the faces a little bit to, you know, had a bit of a kabuki feel. And, you know, that's really something also that threw me off a little bit. Mm. And maybe for a Korean audience, those cultural markers feel so familiar that they don't notice it.
I'm thinking more in terms of just a non-German audience. Somebody comes in without knowing what it is in terms of, say, yeah, you come here and you dance Molière, but you don't dance, you just put that up as the title and you dance something that's sort of vaguely influenced, Molière influenced.
Mm.
People here are going to react way differently than they will down in, say, Dallas.
Yeah.
And that could be the one thing where you're just going in. This is why I don't read stuff, because going in with expectations, they always get shot to hell.
Well, this is what they advertise. If they're going to advertise Wojciech and how dark it is, and they're going to make a prison out of chairs, mm-hmm. and the guy's going to be tortured and all that, that's what I expect to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to do something lighthearted, say, we're going to do a lighthearted little piece with Korean undertones that is loosely based on a German narrative, then I'm going, okay, you know, that's what you're going to do.
Me wonder why this Korean dance company chose this particular story, Wojciech.
Yeah, me too.
To reinterpret.
I really wondered. I said, why did they pick this piece?
No Q&A after that one?
No, sadly, no. I had a few questions. And like I mentioned on the last show, you know that part where Wojciech was being tortured and he was just propped up by these two chairs, and I was watching this and it looked like a magic trick. So how can he even stay like that and not collapse? It was an incredible feat of strength. And it was completely distracting to have the lieutenant, you know, roll on his belly and scratch himself and everybody laughing about that. And I said, that's not well constructed. It's not working for me.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but I gotta say, great dance troupe, technically brilliant. You know, they know what they're doing, except maybe they should pick a different piece next time.
It's 2:35 now.
Already.
You got anything else to say about Wojciech?
No, okay. I'm going to shut up now.
You got any more any more questions about Wojciech?
Nope.
Am I getting closer in my pronunciation?
Yes.
Okay, cool. How about we go to a couple of messages and we'll be back on the other side. This is Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer and your mobile device.
Movement Museum, opinions and primary voices. In a world increasingly reduced to a who markets louder philosophy that is, by definition, going to steamroll contemporary dance right out of existence, Movement Museum is an hour-long talk show where all you will hear is honest and compelling opinions. Opinions on why dance matters. Opinions on why dance. Opinions on what dance matters. Opinions on what dance. We talk to dancers, choreographers, teachers, composers, academics, audience members, producers, presenters, and anyone else with an opinion on dance. What moves them? What do they like? And most importantly, why? Live Thursdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and archive for all of eternity Friday mornings at movement-museum.blogspot.com.
And we're back. In the background there, that's Barry Romberg's Random Access doing The Gods Must Be Smiling. And it tweaks and honks and bleeps and blats in the background there. Keeps you all on your toes. My name's Zeke. I'm here with Bettina and with Jen. We're the Movement Museum Collective, where, yeah, we talk about dance. And we're talking lots about dance. But before we talk about dance that we saw recently, ooh, how's that for a nice segue? I think we're going to talk about dance that we haven't seen, but is back in history.
That's right.
Over to you, Bettina.
Over to me, our weekly segment, This Week in Dance History. Happy birthday to Trisha Brown.
Yes!
Still alive. I picked one that was still alive. Mm. And actually, her birthday is today, November 25th. She was born in 1936 in Aberdeen, Washington. And she's a postmodernist American choreographer and dancer.
Kick-ass one as well.
Trisha Brown, the most widely acclaimed choreographer to emerge from the postmodern era, first came to public notice when she began showing her work with the Judson Dance Theater in the 1960s. Along with like-minded artists including Yvonne Rainer, Steve Paxton, and Simone Forte, she pushed the limits of what could be considered appropriate movement for choreography, thereby changing modern dance forever. This hotbed of dance revolution was imbued with a maverick spirit and blessed with a total disrespect for assumption, qualities that Ms. Brown still exhibits even as she brings her work to the greater opera houses of the world today. Trisha Brown is the first woman choreographer to receive the coveted MacArthur Foundation Fellowship and has been awarded many other honors, including 5 fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts and 2 John Simon Guggenheim Fellowships. Happy birthday, Trisha.
Yes, happy birthday. Although that thing's the most, what is it, the most prevalent postmodern dancer, is that the phrase?
Hang on, the most wildly acclaimed choreographer to emerge from the postmodern era. I got that from her website, by the way, is www.trishabrowncompany.org.
Now that made me start thinking, okay, so what other postmodern era dancers can I think of? I got Paul Taylor, and she smokes Paul Taylor, but not by that much. But the one that I think might smoke her is Alvin Ailey, where he wouldn't be considered a postmodern dancer or choreographer, but he definitely, besides being dead, is much better known than she is.
That's possible. Maybe it just depends on how you define postmodern in that case.
Or it's which Malta. Looking at it from her side, they're only going to be saying wonderful things about her.
Yes,
and for the most part, she is wonderful and amazing. And if I could be which Malta half as good as she is at the age of 74,
not bad, huh?
I'd be very happy with myself.
Yeah, there's one cool piece that she did was what was called On the Rooftops, which was taking place in New York City, and she had 12 dancers on 10 rooftops and on 10 blocks, and one would do a movement, and then the other one on the next block over would see it and then repeat the movement. So she did a lot of site-specific stuff, which is very, very cool.
Climbing up and down the sides of buildings.
Yes, and something called what is it called? I got it here. On the wall, I think wall piece. Yeah, walking on the wall.
Yeah, that's the one.
And roof piece was the other one on the roof.
You know, have you been to Dia Beacon yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay, because her company dances regularly there among the minimalist sculptures.
Nice. Uh-huh. Yeah. She also did stuff with Robert Rauschenberg and Laurie Anderson. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool woman. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Check it out. Happy birthday.
We're going to have to come out with that theme music.
You're not going to sing, are we?
I already sang once today.
That's true. You were very good.
No,
so
I wasn't.
Since you were singing, can you talk now about stuff that you saw?
Yeah, well, first off, I don't know, you want me to go for the good or the bad?
Let's start with the bad and get it over with quick.
Fred Gravel. He's a
really?
Nice guy, yeah.
Fred Gravel?
Yeah, no, he's a nice guy. He was here, I think, about a month and a half ago, something like that.
Wow.
And now I'm becoming less and less of a fan of his dance, just because it's so, a hodgepodge. It's the sort of thing, he does call it some sort of cabaret, and this is Gravel Works, which was at La Chapelle for, I think, 2 weeks or so in the past.
Yeah,
and
he's
a hotsy-totsy guy, because he got, he choreographed, and I'd love to actually see it, but Pierre Lapointe, the big Quebecois rock star, vedette, and so on, Gravel choreographed something for him, and then everything exploded. And I think the thing that set me off first was because an awful lot of his pieces come out with him being doing a monologue to explain what he's doing, and he's very laid back and laissez-faire about it, which sort of belies how much practice goes into what they're doing and so on. It sort of makes you think that it is very sort of slackers, clerks, whoever that filmmaker is, when I would guess it's not that. But the thing that set me off was how he talked about how this was the third time that they had presented Gravel Works, and so therefore it must be part of the repertoire, I think is the technical term. And it occurred to me, no, Giselle is part of the repertoire in terms of when you have a piece that is done by many companies around the world, it is the wishbone, to use the fancy term lingua franca of something that is part of the repertoire, just to, because your company does it often, that's just sort of somebody saying, nah, we like you, therefore we want you to do it. It doesn't become part of the repertoire.
Maybe the repertoire of his particular company.
Yeah, but even then, it's the sort of thing where, given that he only does either gravel works, or I can't remember the name of the other one he did during the FTA, which then also got redone at La Chapelle, but back in September. Yeah, it's not like they're separate. Like, if some of those pieces from, because Gravel Works was about, I don't know, 15 different set pieces. And yeah, to get into that, it's like if some of those were to come out and he were to use, this is the Witchmont, this is piece A from this, and then that gets sort of taken out. Then, yeah, part of the repertoire. But that's just technical stuff. It's more to get back down to it. What I don't like is just, yeah, that whole slacker clerk's attitude type of stuff. It's, I like my dancers much more rigorous. I like
you want to see the sweat.
And, I want to see the sweat. Not only the sweat, I want to see the on point. I want to see the art. I don't want to think that, yeah, I can get up. Like, I went through that phase with visual art where I can do that. And then I realized after the fact that, okay, no, in certain cases, these conceptual pieces, they thought of it first, and I can still do that. And okay, fine, you thought about it first. In the stuff that Fred does, and Fred, don't take this personally if you hear it, but it is the sort of thing where I'm not getting any conceptual nature out of it, and so therefore, when it's like, I can do that, then it's like, okay, there's no sort of special stuff happening. And that's with the conceptual art, it's, you realize, okay, so there's some thought that goes into it, and sometimes when the thought goes into it, it elevates, you say, oh my God, that's a wonderful way to conceive of something, so as to come up with something that's, okay, a little bit boring. But without any conceptual basis, without any conceptual framework, it's just a bunch of sort of stuff. And there, yeah, he's got some cool moves, but they seem to be the same moves over and over. And so once you see them once, then you see them again, and then you see them in a different show, then at which point you're saying, okay, I've seen this, let's build on something. It's not exactly the need to have a sort of set of editions of Gravel works, or I'm now confusing my cultural media trying to make some sort of analogy, and it's not working. So let's take that back and start over again. It's where this same move gets repeated over and over again throughout various parts of the piece without really saying anything. It's the sort of thing where it's, okay, let's try and start up again. And ultimately it just left me sort of blah.
Did it feel like a lot of filler?
And not filler per se, but more like sort of that lecture in grade 10 or the second year of university where you'd read the notes, read the play, you knew everything, and all that was happening was the professor was rehashing stuff that you knew already, and you're sort of saying, I really don't need this. I know as much as the professor does. They're not imparting any new knowledge on here. This is filling up time. Not exactly a waste of time. I'm glad I saw it because that enables me to have a better and further understanding of his work, so that in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 50 years, when he becomes 74, I will say, I was there then, and I can see the progression. But it is the sort of thing, that time,
it doesn't speak to you.
No, the closest thing that spoke to me was when they got naked, and at which point I think that speaks to everybody at all times.
Yeah, that's a pretty easy device to get naked attention. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. But yeah.
You want to move on to the good stuff?
Imprudence. Yes, Imprudence. I adore these guys. I'm going to try. Yeah, they're, first of all, yeah, they be a complete and utter, what is it, fanboy, BFF, and go completely slobbering over the top. They have their show coming up on the 5th of December. I'm going to try and drag all of you to see it and stuff like that, because it is tons of fun. We've had Marie-Ève Albert on the show twice now, and we got to get somebody else on, because now that we officially can show people that we can do interviews in French, because the whole troupe is pretty much French, and that's their big thing. They think we're English and we're blokes and squareheads, so they don't want to talk to us, because they don't have, or they don't realize that we make more mistakes in English, or I make more mistakes in English, I won't talk about you guys, than they would make in English. But anyhow, I digress. Imprudence, basically it is a theater sport, in that they have teams, and they come out with this is what you guys got to do, and this is how long you got to do it, and then the audience votes on who's better and what. And the thing that I just like so much is that it makes dance extremely accessible. And it is the sort of thing where you realize that because it is completely improvised, yeah, it's not going to be rigorous. So, okay, so if they don't do the pirouette or they don't do the, what is it, porte de bras? Did I get that close? It's okay. And then because also it is a performer, which, well, the sports, it's, they definitely go for the easy gags and so on, but it's a lighthearted, fun way of doing it. It's how many other dance performances can you see where you can drink beer while you're watching the dance?
And this is contact improv?
Pretty much, yes. Let me spit this out properly. Not having seen an awful lot of contact improv, my presumption would be that it is based on it, because they've, I think, taken it further, because they each set piece, which lasts anywhere from like a minute to 3 minutes, is built on a certain framework of rules. And whether it's sort of like an easy one where it's okay, this team does some set of choreography, improvised choreography forward, then the other team has got to do it backwards.
Cool.
And I think by setting up those frameworks, it's like with my understanding of contact improv is basically you just got to, for the most part, touch people, fall down, jump up, and it's just sort of much more muscular and much more physical and athletic than classical or modern dance. Jen, you're looking at me quizzically.
Would you say that it's more physical than classical or modern?
Because that's my understanding. Physical in terms of it's closer to a hockey game than...
More likely to get hurt? Mean physical? Okay.
In terms of the movements are... More like you can hip check somebody in contact dance, although you don't really want to hip check them into the boards.
I think yes and no. I think it can be both. And if you want to refine more the practice of contact improv, which I'm not someone who've practiced a lot, but I know there's a big community here, so people may disagree or not. But there is definitely like a highly physical aspect of it where there is a lot more risks. Because when you're using another body to project yourself into space or, you know, hurling yourself or being lifted, yeah, there is definitely that more risk. Though I wouldn't compare it to a hockey game.
I'm saying it slowly approaches. It's not that it's there and it's not that it's trying to become one, but it's that moves that you would do in hockey or that you would do in basketball are sort of moves that would die, whereas in sort of classical dance or modern dance, you're not going to be, nobody hip checks.
Not on purpose.
Not on purpose.
But yeah, and there it's the, then to my way of viewing, if that's the way that I see contact dance and contact improv, then because Amprudence has imposed this sort of like structure of this is how you guys got to do it, which really has nothing to do with the physicality. It's in certain cases, they're just doing like straight out go-go dancing or straight out disco dancing because that's the easy way to get the laugh. You get the easy laugh, then at which point you win. And if you win, then everybody, they got to give out trophies or something like that.
So how do you decide who's better? So it's basically crowd pleasers?
Yeah, crowd pleasers, right. And whether it's that, because there's certain times where they'll have something where both teams have to come out with, the movement's based on the same theme, and so then you see who can interpret it better. Mm-hmm. There are other times where it's actually strictly based on the movement, and so who moves better. There are other times when it's, they need to come together and all, work together, both teams, and then you just sort of, that's when I don't vote, and I sort of say, it's really tough to tell who's better and who's not.
Who judges?
The audience. You go in and you get two cards, one for each color of team, like it's the red, the yellows, the orange, the greens, or something like that. You get two cards, and then you raise your card up, and then the referee goes around and counts cards, or gets a basic idea of which one has more, although sometimes they will, when it gets really close, they'll have people actually count the cards. And that's when you know how many people are in the audience. And they get like 200 people monthly, which is
really great.
Yes, and they're all paying like $8 a ticket.
Mm-hmm. Nice. It must be fun because it's participatory. The audience can chime in and you get to vote. And I guess that makes you feel closer to the performance because you have a real influence on what's going on, right?
You might. I definitely like that Proscenium March thing. And I don't feel that it is... that I'm participating in it. I definitely do feel as a viewer, and I always get annoyed when I get there late, and because they're in Cafe Campus and it's like a boxing ring on the dance floor, it's if you like don't get there on time, it gets really, really difficult to see the whole stage. Uh-huh. And so it is the sort of thing where Yeah, no, I don't feel like I'm participating. I do want to... No, I don't even want to do that. No.
It makes me wonder, does it ever get gimmicky or like too geared towards... Because sometimes when you want to get at the audience or get their vote, you know, it becomes gimmicky or like trying to get them to laugh and becomes humorous. Do you ever find that happens?
Yeah, no, there are times when they go for the easy laugh and then they always... Each show, they have one last piece where everybody... Each individual dancer does a 30-minute solo that's based on something that an audience member shouts out. And so there are certain times where you get audience members shouting out stuff like teapot. It's relatively simple for somebody to do a teapot solo for 30 seconds. But then you get other ones sort of like, E equals MC squared, more theoretical, sort of scientific type of stuff where the audience member is trying to, they're trying to get the laugh. And at which point, yeah. And so there are set pieces and so on.
Yeah, I think we should all go together. I haven't been to an improv dance.
I'm going to go.
And then it's also with them, one of the things that I've been dying to do, and they're sort of influencing my way of thinking, is in terms of, Jen, you talk about critiquing and doing critical stuff on dance and how to do it. One of the things that occurred to me is, again, going along on that sports analogy, to me, to do a play-by-play of improv dance would be very cool. And then I'm also thinking about, okay, so this is, as far as a dance performance goes, that whole sort of linear, it's a time-based thing, and you sort of focus in on some of it, but don't catch everything. But the nature of criticism that that I'm thinking of tries to encompass everything. And I'm realizing, if you're like doing play-by-play on a hockey game, you're only talking about the guy with a puck.
Yeah, because there's a puck. When you do a dance performance, very often there are things going on that are equally important on different places.
But that's why there's a spotlight. And I only have two eyes. And it is, I'm just trying to work through, because I am working on some sort of theory of dance review that's a little bit more complex and thought-provoking. And yeah, I'm definitely coming in from, I've heard lots and lots of play-by-play, and I do like this idea of, and I'm going to work it through. We'll see over the next 5, 10, 74 years if I can actually come up with something. But I do like this sort of comparison of it to play-by-play, because it does make it, to me, in theory at least, a lot more understandable if I'm focusing in on specific things and then the audience recognizes that there is other things that I have, for whatever reason, decided are secondary, and because I can only talk so fast and see so many things, there are only these, or take so many notes, there are these things that I'm concentrating on.
Would be interesting exercise. You should go to a dress rehearsal and actually do a play-by-play narrative.
I'm thinking of just getting like the best seat in the house. So talking to them, getting the best seat in the house, which means we don't have to arrive all that early. And then at which point getting a recorder and then saying, who wants to do the color commentary?
I'm just wondering if it's going to annoy everybody else around us.
We can ask.
Okay.
But this is a work in progress.
Okay. Good idea.
Oh, it's 2:56.
I know. Time flies.
Anybody have what they're going
burning
to...
Desires?
Burning desires?
Or any other last critiques?
Nah, I'm going to do Fortier Dance next time and we have a little more time.
Okay. And then as far as who's going to see what, this sort of like a local dance calendar. Anybody got... I
You've got the sheet in front of you. I can't remember what
Friday
I'm seeing.
On Friday, I'm going to see Marie... what is that? Tangente. I don't know her name right now.
Marie-Bay? Marie-Bay sort de son corps?
Oui. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to see that on Tangente this Friday, so I believe it's playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
Mm-hmm. And it goes on through the next week as well.
Oh.
Because, Bettina's got tickets as well.
Cool.
There's also Coleman Lemieux and the Sun Ra Orchestra at the Sankey Salle starting on December 1st, which is next week. And
yes,
that one, yes,
to
now
that.
There, it's, I actually saw Sun Ra when he was alive before it became sort of like, don't look at me like that. I'm an old guy.
He was alive. Did I say
before he was alive? I meant before he was dead.
Before he was alive.
It sounds very Egyptian.
No, it's you'll actually get a kick out of it because it's Saturnalia.
Oh,
mm-hmm, it is.
Why would I get a kick out of this specifically?
You're the astronomer in the
house.
That's
true.
And it's Sun Ra believed and convinced everybody else that he was from Saturn.
Oh, right. I like it.
Uh huh. There's also La Fabrique Chantier de Création 4 is doing Le Chantier de Novembre, and I see where I screwed up on this, is some of these don't have where they're happening them. So yes, consult Google. Google is your friend. Manon Olney is performing at the Maison de la Culture Plateau on December 3rd. She's doing Peluche, précédée des Carnivals des Animaux. As I said, we got Les Imprudences on December 5th. That's happening at Café Campus, $8, and we'll see you all there for that one. There's the Danse de Mi-Chemin, LADMI, which is the École de Danse Contemporaine. They're doing their performance in between December 8th and 10th. We got Une Femme Virgule, Un Homme by Nancy Leduc at Tangente starting on December 9th. And then I know you're all excited because Les Grands Ballets Canadiens are doing the Nutcracker starting on December 11th, which is my mom's birthday. And then we also should mention that they are doing the Marché Casse-Noisette, which is down at the Palais du Congrès. If you have any excess cash, they are doing their best. They've done what I assume is, I haven't been down there because it only started today. Mm-hmm. Yes, today. Today is the 25th. Happy Thanksgiving to all our American listeners, yes. By the way.
Happy Turkey Day. Oh, gobble, yes. Gobble, gobble, gobble.
They got some really fancy, swanky, cool stores, stuff to put up booths in Palais du Congrès so that you can buy the perfect holiday gift for your friends, family, people who co-workers, colleagues, and so on and so forth. And then I'm not entirely certain, but I think that all the proceeds then go to Les Grands Ballets Canadiens so that they can then continue, because they are by far and away the largest troupe in the city.
And are these things Nutcracker related gifts, or are they basically random gifts?
Not random gifts in terms of they are selected high scale, upscale stuff, but not Nutcracker related at all.
Okay. Interesting.
Anyhow, I see Johnny Black hanging out there. We got positive vibes coming on. My name is Zeke. I've been here with Jen, with Bettina. We're Movement Museum, talking about dance on your radio, on your computer, on your mobile device. Thank you guys very, very much. You guys make me look and sound way better than I have any right to be. And we will talk to you next week.